This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Native athletes in North Dakota endured racially charged taunts from fans for the opposing team during recent high school basketball games. It's one of a persistent barrage of incidents generating complaints from parents and tribes, and has also sparked a federal civil rights investigation. Coming up this hour, we'll hear from people who say there is an increase in racist behavior by fans and get some ideas about what can be done. There's more after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new collection of sovereign-to-sovereign agreements seeks to improve collaboration between tribes and federal agencies as they work together on land management. Shared goals often include managing wildlife, improving wildlife habitat, and other issues. The Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse has more.
In 2021, a federal joint order called for agreements to co-steward federal lands with tribal governments and to incorporate indigenous knowledge. Earlier this year, an online repository of such agreements was put together by a number of organizations, including the Native American Rights Fund. Some scholars have recently talked about building bridges to a new era of more inclusive public lands management.
The repository is basically the place to get the bricks to build that bridge. It's the raw materials you need to understand what are the legal mechanisms that allow for these types of arrangements to exist on the land.
Adam Montague Stapleton is a staff attorney with the Native American Rights Fund. She cited a cultural burn on the Sequoia National Forest last year by members of several tribes as an example of the sort of work that such agreements can enable. I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
The Native American Studies Department at the University of New Mexico is marking 20 years of its Bachelor of Arts in Native American Studies. The department hosted a symposium on Tuesday in Albuquerque to celebrate the milestone. Dr. Tiffany Lee is a professor and is chair of UNM Native American Studies.
It's a huge marker of progress and evolution of Native American Studies as a discipline and a field. You know, Native American Studies actually started in 1970, so it's actually been over 50 years since it's been in existence at UNM, but never as an academic degree program until our minor in 1999, which was many years later, and then in 2004 with the bachelor's. And now we're still evolving with a master's and a PhD program.
She says the biggest success of the bachelor program are the students and alumni.
They go out in the world and show how a Native American Studies degree can be applied in numerous fields, because you're not just getting a degree, you're getting skills and critical thinking, critical reading and writing skills that can be applied to any career, any kind of job. But more than a job, they're really about they're motivated to do community building and serve their communities and contribute in ways that are transformative, that are, you know, in support of their community's self-determination.
As for the future, Lee is excited to see how the program will evolve in the next 20 years.
Just to continue to keep bringing students to campus and expanding the field also to, I guess, students who work with Native communities, maybe aren't always from those communities, but there's a lot of room for a lot of allies as well to participate and learn from Native American Studies. So we're just excited to continue to learn with the times and contribute with our students.
The symposium featured alumni talking about how they're implementing their Native American Studies degree in their work, including on the federal, state, and local level. The Blackfeet Nation hosted Lily Gladstone Day Tuesday in Browning, Montana. The Oscar-nominated actress was honored for her achievements in the film and television industry. The day included a headdress transfer to Gladstone from the Women's Stand-Up Headdress Society, an honor song, and gift presentations. In remarks streamed online, Gladstone, who grew up on the reservation, called the moment full circle and spoke to young people hoping to inspire them. She also thanked the Native community for supporting her. Gladstone made history with awards and the Oscar nomination for her performance in Killers of the Flower Moon. She played Molly Burkhart in the film, which tells the story of murders of Osage people for oil money. Gladstone's next projects include the film The Memory Police and the TV series Under the Bridge. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm your host, Sean Spruce. Minot Public Schools in North Dakota issued a public apology over the conduct of some of its fans at a boys' two-way basketball tournament this month. The action comes after what the superintendent called potentially discriminating conduct targeting Native players. It's one in a series of complaints about racially insensitive taunting from the stands, some of which have been captured on video. The U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights is investigating. Pressure from Native parents and advocates prompted the North Dakota High School Activities Association to adopt a zero-tolerance policy for racially insensitive behavior by fans. Advocates worry there's an upturn of troubling incidents in an area with a history of racial strife aimed at Native American people. You can join our conversation today by calling 1-800-996-2848. Who should be responsible for putting a stop to that kind of behavior in the crowd at sporting events and other activities? Our phone number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Give us a call. Phone lines are open. We'd really love to hear from our listeners today and get their perspectives. I also want to add some disclaimers here. We did reach out to the Minot Public Schools and got an email response from Mark Vollmer, the superintendent, who declined our invitation to appear on our show today. The statement reads, Minot Public Schools supports your efforts to bring attention to this important topic, and we will continue to work to address the issue at the school district level. We also reached out to the North Dakota High School Activities Association, but we didn't hear back from them before the start of today's show. Let's meet our guests. Joining us now from Eagle Butte, South Dakota, is Lance Eaglestaff. He's the father of a Bismarck High School boys basketball player and also a coach of the Jay Sizzle AAU team. He is Lakota from Cheyenne River. Hello, Lance. Welcome to Native America Calling, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet.
Also joining us today on the show from Belcourt, North Dakota, is Representative Jamie Davis. She's a member of the North Dakota House of Representatives, and she is Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. Hello, Representative Davis. Jamie, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. And also joining us today from Bismarck, North Dakota, is Heather Demaray. She's the chairwoman for the Indigenous Parent Advisory Committee for the Bismarck Public Schools, and she's a member of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. Hello, Heather. Thank you as well for joining us today.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Good afternoon to you as well. Lance, let's begin with you. Now, your son is part of this team that we mentioned in the introduction. Give us some background. What can you tell us about the game and about what you heard and saw from the opposing team's fans?
This was a couple years ago. So the game was at Jamestown, North Dakota, and was unable to make the game. So we were watching it on the live stream, and we heard some taunting and some name calling prior to the first half, and I believe Quinn was had approached the principal and the AD and say, hey, you know what they're doing is, you know, not right, and you're not doing nothing about it. And they basically said, hey, we're going to kick you out of the gym if you don't be quiet, and along with some other parents that were pretty irate. And they allowed the game to go on with this taunting, and the thing about it was live streamed, and it was, you know, recorded, so we had all the evidence we needed, and we kind of just put them on blast after witnessing the incident on online. I mean, I was frustrated as a parent, but to allow the game to continue was, to me, is disheartening. And I couldn't believe that, you know, my kid had to endure this in the year 2023. So from there, we just went all the routes we could do to get some kind of help, I guess.
Lance, you described taunting. Can you be a little bit more specific if you're comfortable sharing, like, what were they saying? What was the tone? Provide a little more detail if you could.
The Hollywood, I don't know how to say the hollering, the tomahawk, or I don't know what, I mean, the woo or whatever, and then calling the other student names, you know, using the N-word when he's running by, and, you know, the refs are standing right there while they're saying it to him, and then, you know, telling my kid to, you know, go back to the res, you know, all these little mockery comments towards my son. You know, it was just, to me, I guess I was just like, I'm not going to deal with it. You know, I'm going to stand up for what's right and then kind of just stay on that path, because I think it happens to kids that don't have parents that are willing to stand up for them. You know what I mean? That don't have the resources. So, I was just like, I'm going to stand up and try to make change for the better. And hopefully we make some noise where people are going to be like, hey, you know what, these guys are right.
Okay. Now you're describing an incident that occurred last year with the Bismarck High School team when they played against Jamestown. Now, were you at this most recent game earlier this year when a similar situation occurred?
I wasn't there. But I really don't know what happened as far as the whole incident with that part. I guess I wasn't there, so I couldn't really comment on that one. My son's still part of the team, but I wasn't there. And I know it doesn't just happen, you know, it doesn't just happen to Bismarck or to the kids that are playing. It happens all over the Dakotas, North, South Dakota. You know, I think it goes untalked about publicly. I think it's kind of like you go home and you hear what that guy said to me, you know, kind of a, like, keep it on the low type of conversation. And I think it's, we're too far in age in an era where there's gotta be some kind of middle ground or some, at least a stop to it or something's gotta be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we just hear about these incidents, unfortunately, just occurring too frequently and too recently as well. Lance, thanks for kicking us off. I want to bring Heather into the conversation now, because Heather, the Indigenous Parent Advisory Committee, this is a group of parents that is committed to making sure this kind of behavior stops. What is your strategy, and how will you be addressing this issue and others going forward?
So I am new to this position, and so we just had our first meeting the weekend before the incident that happened in Minot. And so I'm learning and I'm listening. And as somebody in this type of role, it's my responsibility to hear our families in the community. And it is disheartening, and this behavior is not acceptable. So I am definitely going to fulfill my duty and, you know, visit with the board, have these difficult conversations with the board, and see what we can do by working with the school district and the North Dakota High School Athletics Association, and working with the community, because this is a community responsibility to work together and have these difficult conversations. You know, I feel like when are these racial incidents, the slurs, the derogatory taunting, you know, this is plain disrespectful at these student athletic events. And it's like, when is it going to end? When is enough enough? And when are we as a community going to step it up and call out this bad behavior? Why does it have to take something extreme to happen for people to feel compassion, guilt, shame, and then move, you know, and then have that movement for change? We as a community need to take responsibility and have some accountability. And parents, it's up to us to correct the behavior. Sometimes I think we get so comfortable by loving our children, we get blindsided by our own biased love, that we think the world of our children, and we think that they wouldn't do something so disrespectful But if you really listen to their conversations, like when they joke around and, you know, like I think of my son and his friends, he's got a diverse population of friends. And sometimes, you know, I listen to them joke about these stereotypes amongst each other. And I listen and I confront them and I ask them, why do you guys talk to each other like this? You know, because it's become such a norm in our, like, in our society, in their little communities, you know, because they've accepted, like, that stigma of
it's been normalized.
It's been so normalized. Yeah. And I think of the teachers in the classrooms and, you know, they hear it, like, they need to intervene. They need to correct it. Coaches need to interview the refs. If we're sitting in the stands as parents and, We need to just intervene and take action to have this movement of change and to be brave and to speak up and advocate for what, you know, is right.
Okay. And Heather, this incident that occurred at the AA basketball tournament earlier this month, there in Minot, what do you know about that most recent incident?
The most recent incident in Minot, I did hear about it, and with the taunting, like they were making the derogatory marks when he was playing. I was not there, but, you know, from what I heard from the report of what was reported, and my son, he's a basketball player too, so it's like his friends, and, you know, like he shows me and shares me with me what he hears and stuff. And it's just so disheartening because it's like, these are children, you know, and this is part of their millstones and molding them into these human beings who are supposed to be productive adults. And when there's no discipline for the people doing this unacceptable behavior, you know, it's like, who's going to be the ones to discipline them? And so I feel like as my role on this board, like I need to reach out to the point of contacts in for like these policies and procedures, like North Dakota High School Athletics Association, with the superintendent, you know, and follow through with creating change, like for the zero tolerance, the no tolerance of
the policy there.
Each other. Yeah, the policy.
Right. Okay. We're going to have to take a short break here, Heather, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk a lot more about this issue recently in North Dakota. Stay with us, listeners. A Minnesota man has started a unique collection of music by Native artists. He has a collection of vinyl records and tapes of folk, rock, blues, and country music that few people have ever heard. We'll talk with Justice Broken Rope about his passion to share his collection with other music lovers around the world. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Archaeology Southwest. Did you know almost all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted or vandalized? Looting and vandalism impact Indigenous people, past, present, and future. Every day, countless Native American cultural items are lost or damaged forever through looting and vandalism. Federal and tribal laws protect archaeological resources. More information about ending archaeological resource crime and how to submit a tip at savehistory.org and on social media at savehistory.
You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and today we are talking about troubling incidents in the state of North Dakota involving basketball fans who engaged in racially charged taunts at Native players on the court. Is there any way to end this type of behavior in school sports? And this is the focus of our conversation with our guest today, and we encourage listeners to join us. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to move on now to our next guest, Representative Jamie Davis up in Belcourt, North Dakota. And Jamie, how did you first find out about these racial issues at this recent basketball game in Minot, and what were your initial thoughts?
Hey, thank you for having me. I found out through newspaper, and again, I was just devastated, because I understand what these kids are going through. And, you know, that's the whole thing for me, I guess, is like, it's just, like Mr. Eaglestaff and Ms. Demery had stated, you know, it's beyond the time for change and to address these issues and to really, you know, find a way to stop this. The zero tolerance has to be implemented some way, somehow. And so that's how I came across this, and I posted it on my Facebook page, and people were engaging, and that's when I, you know, got more detail, and it just was heartbreaking to see that these kids have to go through this, and it's just, there's just no excuse anymore. And the fact that one of the parents, you know, got ejected from it for standing up for his child, it just blows my mind that, you know, they continue to find ways to make it about the other rather than what the actual problem is, which is racist taunting comments and actions and, you know, throwing out the people that are advocating against it. I'm tired of it, and I'm doing what I can to advocate and to hopefully pass more laws and policies and really hold, you know, North Dakota High School Athletic Association accountable where they can be held accountable. I'm finding more and more that, you know, as an association, I'm not sure that that's the place that can be, you know, the one to hold these schools accountable. So as a legislator, what is it? What can we do? And that's where I'm really looking at towards, you know, I hate to escalate it, but if it needs to go there, you know, call the peace officers and, you know, report hate crimes or a bias or a hate incident at the very least. And I mean, if you look at those definitions, it's right on to what is happening here. And again, like they said, you know, it's not just happening here in North Dakota or the Dakotas. It's sadly across our nation. I mean, we can look at the incidents that would happen at, you know, the Utah college basketball team in Gonzaga and what happened in Coeur d'Alene there just a couple days ago. You know, so we have to start holding people accountable. And if we can't do it through policies by organizations, then the laws and, you know, the laws need to be updated and have to be there to protect those that have to go through these incidences.
Well, Jamie, let's talk more about this zero tolerance policy that was implemented by the North Dakota High School Activities Association. And Heather mentioned it earlier on the show. And apparently it's not working very well. So what more needs to happen there within that association and elsewhere just to immediately just curb some of this behavior occurring in these games?
Right. So, you know, from my understanding, when I first, you know, because like Mr. Eaglestaff had mentioned, you know, this happened, what really kind of kicked it off was what happened in Jamestown last year. And, you know, I wrote to the high school athletic association then asking for, again, the zero tolerance, but they're just guidelines. They're not policy. They're not, you know, there's no consequences if they don't, because at the same time, they can only provide guidelines because they don't have the power to uphold anything. Everything is held at the local level, which I'm in favor for in a lot of instances, but I don't know that this is the time to keep it at the local level. But at the same time, I get it because it's the school system. It's a public event. So therefore, it has to be the a part of the guidelines where they were to identify who's the administrator at each of these events. And if anything like this happens, you were to report it to the administrator. And the administrator has the guidelines or the policies in place that is to every single school different of whatever they implemented, and they would follow those policies. I don't know which one, you know, what Minot has in place. But, you know, again, it's different at every school. But it's not happening. The point is, you know, I've gotten throughout this, and it's just, for me, I only get calls during the basketball season, girls and boys. So, you know, I don't know what's going on at just that basketball event.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it might have to do with just, it's a more intimate setting in a basketball game as opposed to like a football stadium, which is outside. Maybe that could be something. And, of course, just the passion in the game of basketball.
Right. And, you know, the other side of this is, you know, okay, we have administrators. We have people to look out for these things. The refs are supposed to be held responsible, all of that. But also just people in general. Like, if I'm going to basketball events, if I see somebody acting up or not acting right or whatever, I'm going to go over and be like, hey, you know, here back home in Belcourt here, went to a game and my aunt was sitting next to me and they were doing a drama for an honoring. And some girls that aren't from here, they're from this school that came, they were giggling and laughing and kind of, you know, being a little loud. And my aunt went over very nicely and, you know, said, girls, you need to, you know, quiet down, where this is an honoring. And they did, you know, and that's why can't we do that? Why can't somebody say, hey, you know, because if I see Mike, you know, if I were to see anybody I'm related to or kids, I'm going to go over and say, hey, that's not right. These are racist. This is wrong. Why can't we do that? You know, so I also hold people, everyday people, accountable as well.
Sure, sure. I want to read a caller comment. They didn't want to come on the air, but they did just share with our producers. This is their thought. These incidents bring shame on the town because it reflects on how the people who live there disrespect others. So appreciate that caller comment. And Lance, let's go back to you now, because you played basketball. You played high school basketball when you were younger. And were the experiences similar back in your playing days with regard to taunts and other racist behavior by fans from opposing teams?
Yeah, they were a lot similar to what my son had to endure. But at the time, I kind of, as a kid, I kind of took it as, well, they're mad because I'm better at basketball than these non-native kids, and so they were trying to disrupt our game, or, you know, trying to get in our heads and beat us. And so I kind of played it off. But, you know, as you get older and you see how the world really works, and, you know, I think that any type of racism and any kind of high school sport is ridiculous. I mean, there should be absolutely nothing to do with race in any kind of sport, because these kids are all minors and they're teenagers. You know what I mean? I understand that kids taunt regardless. I mean, and any kind of thing, they taunt each other, but, you know, to use one's race is just kind of like, man, wow. Like, you know, yeah. Where are you learning this behavior from? Why would you even bring in race to the equation? You know, it's just kind of, like I said, it's disheartening that we had to, that my son had to endure that. But, you know, I think he kind of realized that, you know, that the same thing is that people don't want to see natives thriving, you know, on or off the res. I guess is kind of an old Indian saying, the crabs in a bucket kind of scenario. And so to hold that.
Lance, what did you tell your son? I mean, after that game last year, when he came off the court and you drove home, I mean, what was the conversation between you and your son?
I just talked to him and asked him what he thought about it. And he was like, he kind of said, he was real quiet about it at first. He's a real humble kid, and he's kind of like, you know, he's like, he was upset, and all he said was he was worried about his teammate, because I don't think his teammate has ever experienced any type of racial taunts, or, you know, I mean, it never happened to him, and he's younger, and he was like, I'm just worried about my teammate, you know. And I'm like, are you good? You know, how you feel about it? And he's like, you know, I don't really care about what they said, you know, it's not going to affect me. You know, he kind of already blocked it out, where he's like, I'm not going to let it get to me. And he's like, but I'm worried about my teammate, you know, how it affected him, how he took it, you know? So, I think that our kids in day and age are real resilient for, these type of situations. I was surprised how well my son, kind of took it and kind of just went on with it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, mm-hmm. As a parent, I was upset, but I think he was all right with it. He was just like, nah, he's like, I've heard it before, you know, da-da-da, it's nothing new.
Well, I know you mentioned with our producers that in some ways you think maybe it hurts the parents more in the stands, because the players are so focused, like your son's in the game, and they're just focusing on the game, and you're the one in the stands, like, right there, and you have to deal with it, right?
Yeah, well, not only that, but to bring race into it, I mean, you know, I think any native in the Dakotas, Montana, Minnesota, I think that we already are looked down upon on society as like a not equal to anybody, you know what I mean, growing up on a reservation and kind of getting that feeling from going off reservation places. So, I mean, any Native that really that's lived around here kind of understands that people don't look at us as equal, you know. And so when you get kids that are playing, you know, at the top level and they're excelling and they're doing well, you know, people don't like to see that. And especially, I think, non-Natives kind of like, hey, man, what are these guys doing? They're beating us. They're doing all these things. So let's bring them back down or whatever, you know, whatever the situation may be. So
okay.
I think that, you know, like Jamie said, Ms. Davis said, is that, you know, I think if the High School Activity Association, if the school administration, if all these entities with all their boards and all their meetings can't come up with a solution, then something, I think the police need to be involved, you know, because it shouldn't be accepted in any school system. I don't care which school system you come from, what district you come from. It just shouldn't be accepted at all. You know, you're talking about a kid's race, not about the kid's athletic ability or skill ability. You're talking about, you know, a race, you know, bringing down a race, I guess, mocking a race.
Well, let's go with that. Let's say that the police are involved. Let's say like in this recent game or the one last year that your son played in, let's say the police are called out to a game where there are racial taunts. What do you think the police need to do at that point? Do you think they need to start arresting people who are making those kind of comments? Just shut the game down? What should the cops do in that situation?
I would start with the administration for allowing it to continue. I mean, that they're the ones at fault. And then the referees for allowing the game to continue while there was no technicals, there was no stop warnings, there was no warning to the crowds, there was absolutely nothing happened but allowing the game to continue. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then kicking out the parents that were there saying, hey, you know, what you're doing is wrong. I'm like, man, that's a cop-out. You're doing the total opposite of what is actually going on here. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And it happens more times than none. I've heard of like 5 or 6 incidents in North Dakota this year just from coaches and people I know that are on reservation. You know, there was an incident in Spear Lake this year. There was an incident with Standing Rock. They went somewhere, the referees. You know, there's all these incidences, but again, at the end of the day, we can't take it to nobody because nobody's going to listen to us. I'm just a parent that's upset that his kid got made fun of or whatever. But, you know, that's why we push for these policies. And then the High School Activity Association puts a Band-Aid on there and say, well, we're going to do this, but it's not a policy. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, we said, well, only way it's going to change is if we get minorities on your board that's going to help implement change. You know, that's the only way to bring change is to bring everybody together, you know, and they wouldn't do that, you know. So it's kind of like, I mean, they do have one Native dude on there. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but there's got to be a half and half, you know what I mean, to actually get some change brought to the high school at the Activity Association level, I believe.
Sure, especially in a state like North Dakota that has such a large population of Native American people. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Chanupa, who is listening in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, on Keeley. Hello, Chanupa. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for taking this call. And Sean, thank you for another interesting subject. To that brother there, okay, I'm a parent, okay, and I'm also a grandparent. Many years ago, we went to Minot, North Dakota, me and another activist brother. And the way we combat racism up there when they were making remarks to our people, because let's put it this way. White America has always practiced and perfected colonial policies against our people. So those policies are never implemented for change or protection as a clause to help our people. Okay? So here's what we did. These little kids that were saying that crap to our people because they got defeated, why not? I was grateful. Okay? But at the same time, I approached their parents and told them, look, but here's how I did it. I used more of the language. I said, Wakanja nintho piki, daksicha e chumpi niecha ilalabna ospe chakyapi. So it meant, in English, you're the ones that taught your children how to be racist towards ours because of the defeat. And those defeat go back to Little Bighorn, the wagon box fight, and many others, Red Claw's War up there with the Bozeman Trail, the Sauk and Fox people of the Midwest. You know, we're the ones that showed you guys. If you're going to live in our world, leave us alone. That's all we're saying. We can compete in your athletic ability, but don't ever think we can't give you something that's rational. Where it comes from is in your home. And here, that white guy at the end, the game, he came over and apologized and said, it's from our house. And my wife, and he said it, my wife's really on the ornery side, and yeah, you're right. She teaches our kids how to say racist slurs. So this is an interesting topic, and that goes to both of those two that are talking. We'll put it out to all of you from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Chanupa, for that call. And Chanupa stresses, some of this is ingrained behavior in families and communities. And we're going to take a short break here in just a moment. But when we come back, we're going to talk more with our guest, Heather, and just from the standpoint of education and what does it take to educate people and communities and to maybe curb some of this behavior. Maybe that's a possible solution, is just to think more about it from an educational standpoint. And we're also going to take another caller who's joining the show. He's up in Keene, North Dakota, and we're going to hear from him, hear his perspective on this issue. And anyone else listening to the show, maybe you're in North Dakota, maybe you're in South Dakota, maybe you're down in the Southwest, maybe you're in the Pacific Northwest, maybe you're up in Alaska, and if you've dealt with similar types of situations in high school games, basketball, football, wrestling, volleyball, I don't know, any sport, if you've been involved in a situation where you were taunted or one of your children was taunted or a nephew or a niece or a grandchild, give us a call. Tell us what that situation was about, how it made you feel, and if there was ever any way to get any sort of closure, or if you were able to get that situation taken care of there with administration or with officials or with coaches, we'd love to hear your story. So our number here at the studio, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Again, 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll be right back.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and there's still plenty of time to join this discussion today about racially offensive behavior from fans at high school sporting events. The North Dakota High School Activities Association established a zero-tolerance policy on this kind of behavior. Will that be enough, though, to ensure decorum in the stands? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take our next caller now, John, who is listening in Keene, North Dakota. Hello, John. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sean. I just want to, say that you're doing a really good job addressing, Native issues across North Dakota. I'm 94 years old. I've been playing basketball for quite a long time. Of course, not anytime soon, but, 1945, 1946, I don't know if you were aware of a high school basketball team on Devil's Lake. They were called the Satans. Back then, a lot of the racial slurs and racial everything was about 10 times as bad as it was, than now. And the way we actually really, took it upon ourselves was, we didn't forget who we were or who we came from. 1942, the Elbow Woods basketball team, they were champions. We were champions back then. That's something to be proud of. That kind of history has almost been forgotten. The schools these days, I don't know how or why we're at this level still. It's the parents and the grandparents are the ones that implement anything in society. But I want to tell the young listeners out there, the young basketball players, don't ever be ashamed of who you are. We are the first peoples of this land. And, we're the first human beings on this continent, North America. That's the reason why we're so strong and why we're still here today. And why a lot of these high schools are champions or former champions. And, you know, we're on a good road right now. We keep fighting the good fight. We'll remain champions.
Aho, John, really appreciate that call. Wise words from an elder up there in North Dakota, talking about the way things are in Indian country and also back in the day there. A team called the Satans, 1945, 1946. That's just crazy, John. Thank you for sharing that information. And I want to go back now to Heather. And Heather, there with the Indigenous Parent Advisory Committee, obviously you folks are working at this issue from a more systemic standpoint. And I think some people listen to these. You know, this is a matter of educating people, promoting understanding and awareness with these different communities that these Native kids are playing in. And is that a possible solution, or are those just platitudes that don't really resonate when we're talking about this type of deep-seated systemic racism?
Well, I think anything is possible if you put the work into it and if you take that proactive approach, positive proactive approach, and I think it can be effective. I think building a team who wants to get into the school systems and educate, like, for example, maybe like at the back to school orientation, you know, when the kids come back together, make it a part of their orientation of back to school for educating about cultural diversity education, you know, integrating the students to learn about each other and participating and breaking down those barriers, and then talking about racism, talking about stereotypes, you know, when bringing everybody together, I think it would definitely bring that awareness for like cultural competence. You know, cultural competence has those attributes such as, you know, helping you learn about self-knowledge and awareness and about learning about yourself and your own culture, and then to be able to exchange that information. I mean, we take cultural competency or cultural diversity classes in college, and these are kids. So it's like we need to really implement some sort of programming or curriculums that help break down these barriers. And it takes initiative. It takes, you know, initiative from our board. It takes initiative from the community. Bismarck Public Schools, they do have an Indian education. And so they have a team, they have an education director, they have cultural responsive coordinators, and, you know, they do have that access to be in the schools. So the board, the Indigenous Parents Advisory Committee, you know, listening to the community, such as this type of incident right now, you know, for myself, I am going to take this responsibility and make sure to follow through and be consistent and, you know, moving forward to be proactive and positive, because I really do want to be part of a movement for change. You know, I feel like we can find solutions to integrate and bring our community and to bring unity to our community if we can educate and share and build that connection with strengthening everybody's abilities. And because we all have gifts, we all have strengths and abilities. And I think if we work together, you know, it just makes that circle and that, it just makes it stronger. And we have so many talented and educated people in our community who definitely have something to bring to the table, but we just need to take action and we need to take initiative because we all have that responsibility.
Thanks, Heather. Let's take another caller now. Adam, who is listening on the Hopi Reservation in Arizona on station KUYI. Hello, Adam. Oh, it looks like we've dropped Adam. We don't have Adam on the line. I apologize for that, folks. Adam, if you get a chance, please give us a call back. We've still got time to get you on the air. And let's go back now to Representative Jamie Davis. And Jamie, earlier you talked a little bit about your role there in the legislature and maybe promoting maybe some policies or laws that could help curb this tide here of this racist behavior at sporting events. Expand on that a little bit for our listeners. What do you envision there working through the legislative system that could bring about change?
Yeah. So, you know, I guess just coming from my perspective and what I'm capable of doing as a state legislator is, you know, making sure that there's laws in place for if and when these incidents happen and nothing's being done, you know. And I only think of this because of historical, you know, what's been happening. Nothing's being done. There's a zero tolerance policy in place. Still, these are happening. You know, the parents aren't stepping up in the variety of ways. Maybe they are when they get home, but in the moment, still nothing's being done. And when an advocate and a parent does, you know, for their child who is being targeted, they're the ones that get ejected. So, you know, looking at all of that, taking that all of that into consideration, I don't want to escalate unless we absolutely have to, of course. But that's what laws are in place for. That's why they exist, is for when things happen and they get out of control, that's when you have to call, you know, law enforcement, because obviously they're not following the rules and that's what they're there for. And so in looking at our North Dakota, you know, laws, yes, we do need to, you know, update them or, you know, create some new ones. I'm all ears of, you know, how to create that. You know, my whole, just in the research that I've been doing in the past couple of weeks here is, you know, a bias and hate incidents. That's where, you know, acts of prejudice that are not crimes and do not involve violence, threats, or property or damage. That's when you can call and say, hey, there's a bias hate incident happening. You know, they still show up. And, you know, instead of letting everything continue as is, yes, okay, let's take these group over here. We don't know who's doing what, but nobody's saying anything either. So you take them all. You know, remove them all from the event. But is it a full-on hate crime? And that's something, you know, if you're going to have these things and not continue to, you know, turn a blind eye, a hate crime is, at the federal level speaking, is motivated by a bias against race, religion, color, national origin, sexual orientation, gender identity, you know, things like that. So, and that all of these fall into that. And so, you know, as much as that's not my, because a lot of people of color, brown, black, you know, calling the police isn't always a safety measure, isn't always something that we feel comfortable doing. So right. There's that side of it too. Like, I don't think of, oh, I need safety, I'm going to call the police. I think I'm going to call my relatives, you know, that's how I think of it. But yeah, we don't want that either. So that's why I say I'm all ears of how we go through this. Yes, there's the educational side. There's all of these things that have been done, are being done, but should it still happen, we have to have something to hold people accountable. And that's when law enforcement needs to get involved. And, you know, creating laws to protect those that are being targeted. And that's, I guess, where my mind is at as a legislator. So that's what I hope to continue on and, you know, for the next session as well.
Thank you, Jamie. Let's take another caller, Manny now, the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. He's listening on station KIPI. Hello, Manny, and welcome to our show.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, Manny, you sound great.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment. I am a certified principal, and we encountered this at one of our schools I worked with, I and our superintendent. And so from then on, I and the superintendent, we decided to attend games, all our games, and just to be there and observe and, you know, and do that kind of a thing. And but what we did with the school was that happened, and in fact, they're the ones that initiated that, and they wanted to come over to our school and have a meeting. So we did that, and we talked about it, and there was even talk about sending a couple students of theirs to our school and sending a couple ours to their school, and just trying to work things out in a manner that's effective for all. all the kids. And these kids are, you know, are resilient, as somebody said. And I think this racism is getting to rising to a point. And there has got to be some kind of a athletic activity association to deal with this specifically, because it's out there, and we need to address it AASP, because it's very a ugly word that, and what happens there when you get called names like that. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Manny. Really good call there, Manny, from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, listening on KIPI. And that's an interesting solution that he proposed there, like a cross-cultural exchange there, where some of those kids come to the native school and some of the native kids go to the other school and just kind of get to know each other. So, Lance, what do you think of ideas like that? I mean, you've got a son there. Do you think that would work possibly? Like if your son went to that other school and some of those players came to his school for a couple of weeks and just got to know each other? Or just adding fuel to the fire, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that I think they would have to be like in a total culture shock type scenario to like maybe go visit the nearest reservation school and swap, you know, with their school, some students were there to just to see the different culture for native students. You know what I'm saying? I think as a public school, I think Bismarck's a big enough public school where they have quite a bit of minorities. I know in the Bismarck area, I think that's where a lot of the minorities go to school, especially native students. So I don't think it would be that big of a change for them if the student came from Minot to Bismarck High. You know, maybe it would, I'm not sure, but you know, I think MHA is right next door to Minot. I think Belcourt's on the other side of Minot. You know, I think there's places they could exchange students just to get some cultural backgrounds on different tribes.
Lance, do you think this kind of issue is more prevalent at boys' games at the high school level as opposed to girls' games, or are the girls experiencing similar issues?
No, I think it's across the board. I don't think it's just boys' games, or I don't think it's just. I think I got approached by a man from Bismarck. He is native, and his son had wrestled at a school and was discriminated against. So he had called me, and I'm like, man, I don't make the rules. I don't do the rules. I said, all I did was stand up for my kid and went public about it, let him know that, you know, I'm taking a stand. Like, this is things got to change. You know, if it's not, I'm going to continue to hold North Dakota accountable for the actions, you know. And I know they didn't have a control of these students, but at the end of the day, they still didn't really do anything to make a change. So, I know until that day comes that, you know, all sides are happy, I think. I don't think there really is going to be too much change. And I know Jamie's one person. She's probably one against 90, you know. So there's a lot of uphill battle for her as a minority, as a native. And I think that the more people we made aware, maybe national news, maybe, you know, the more people that are aware of this issue, maybe it can help bring change to the areas that need it.
Well, unfortunately, folks, we are out of time for this discussion about racism by fans in North Dakota high school basketball games. I want to thank all of our guests who joined us today. Really, really strong conversation. Representative Jamie Davis, Lance Eaglestaff, and Heather Demaray. Thank you to you all. And also our callers that joined the conversation today and provided some great insights as well. So appreciate everybody chiming in today. And please join us again tomorrow. We'll be having a conversation with a Minneapolis man who wants to share his unique collection of music by Native artists. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Sean Spruce.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Act protects authentic American Indian and Alaska Native artists and craftspeople and their art and craftwork. Under the Act, it is illegal to market art or craftwork misrepresented as American Indian, Indian, Native American, or Alaska Native made, or as the product of a particular Indian tribe. Reporting potential act violations can be done at doi.gov/IACB or at 1-888-ART-FAKE. Support provided by Indian Arts and Crafts Board.
How mitakuye piki? February chante we are pihecha. Chante wanki galakayo, otchana piicha, wayatina, was agiche unwo, wayat in the ayushtayo, chante wayaza huch, yuhapcha, gunki o wogalag unpo. Isamwasola chihanta, lakol waoki otiliayo, nishhealthcare.gov, nishlil mas apkayo, 1-800-318-2596. Le wotchaniki, Medicare and Medicaid otieta hiyapala.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.